welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is the first time that you are here to listen to the Animation Podcast, well, let me just say welcome, my good friend. Make yourself at home, because you'll see this is going to be a lot of fun. But specifically, though, what I'm going to do is that I will be discussing about the latest news that happened this week. So, for example, in this episode, I'm going to start things off with the trailer of Nightmares that the internet is pretty much blasting and pretty much destroying. Then afterwards, we will be looking into another trailer, but this time it's actually about a good movie. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the Blu-ray of the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast, which Disney surprisingly made a last-minute announcement, because that thing is actually going to be released pretty soon. Then afterwards, we will be looking into an anime film that will be coming to North America called In This Corner of the World. And finally, we have Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, or by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And for our first story, I decided I might as well just get this right out of the way because, oh god, I feared for this day to come, to be honest. I remember on social media, everybody has been telling me about this, and in my mind, I was just there like, oh no. Oh no, the time has come. Like, it's just a small appetizer of it, but still, oh god, I dreaded this day. Because honestly, at this point, it's pretty late in the game. Like, this movie is doing the exact same thing as Captain Underpants, where it decided to release the first full trailer just a little more than 2 months before its initial release. And for movies, that's actually really late. And even for Sony, like, I remember for Smurfs Lost Village, they've released it, like, months after the release of that movie right there. And I thought, maybe they're not actually going to do a trailer, considering that it's receiving massive hate online. That and also, Smurfs Lost Village became a box office bomb, so maybe they're just cutting down on the marketing and the advertising on this thing. But nope. They got to do it. Eventually, it has to happen. They got to present something in full length, if they want to spread the word out there. They got to make business as usual with it. And yes, the time has come that Sony Pictures Animation has released the first full trailer of the Emoji Movie. And before I give you my thoughts on it, let me just go and tell you what this trailer is showing us. And basically, it starts out where you got this inside-out-like world where you do see the real world, and it is animated a little bit more realistically, but the whole cartoon aspect, why it's more animation, is the fact that it's the world set in your phone. And you got this one phone where, not one phone, I'm sorry, this one emoji named Gene, who's supposed to be a meh emoji, but his problem is that he has too much emotions. He can't just stay as a one-dimensional character like literally everyone else in the entire movie. So what he has to do is that he's going on this adventure all around the phone to go and become what he says to be normal. And he is also joined by James Comey, who is just literally a giant hand. And you also got a girl named Jailbreak, who is one of the few emojis that, for some reason, actually has a full body. And that's basically what you're getting here. And let me just say, yeah, this sucks. It's awful. Yeah, there is honestly no doubt in my mind that this thing is bad. And oh my god, where do I even begin? And I guess I'm going to go and start things out with the animation. Why not just go and do that? Because the thing is, with the animation, it's kind of interesting. Because execution-wise, I'll give it that, on that aspect, it's not that bad. Like, the animation, Well, yeah, like they are trying to do something that is a bit cartoony, but it's not too cartoony, like either Hotel Transylvania or Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And even like when you go into the real world, when you see the actual human characters outside of the phone, that is actually not bad. That's probably the best thing to say about the Emoji Movie, is that the real world animation is actually pretty good. I'm actually impressed that Sony Animation actually knows how to animate real humans. They know how to do it right now. They finally got it right. Who knows? Maybe next time they'll know how to fully animate a movie. Okay, but yeah, but honestly, the execution is not that bad. But honestly, I would still say that the animation is bad, mainly because the concept of it and the design of the movie is terrible. Just everything from the production design, the character design, and just every, like the art direction, all that is pretty much terrible. It's so poorly crafted in concept that no matter how good you can execute it, no matter how much money you give it, it's still gonna come out as bad. The characters still look like you just took an emoji and you just give it arms and legs. And it's just, it's poorly designed, it looks cheap, and it just feels like crap, really. That's the problem. It's just, conceptually, it's so bad that no matter how good you could pull it out, it's just really, it's still gonna come out as just looking like a bad movie. I'll give it that the animators and the artists who's working at Sony, like, they do their best to make the best out of it, but it's still not going to be enough to make it look bad. You know what I mean? But then you also have the story right over here. And this is probably the worst thing. And that's probably the one thing that really seals it to be a bad movie. Everybody has pretty much pointed out the fact that it's just copying the plot lines of movies like Wreck-It Ralph and Inside Out. And it blatantly shows. Like, you could definitely tell that they're really trying to do Inside Out with the contrast of the world inside the phone and also the real world where you have this one guy who has a crush on a girl and stuff like that. Like, you could definitely tell they're clearly ripping off Inside Out in that sense. While at the same time, you also got a bit of the Wreck-It Ralph story where it's pretty much set in this world where you're in the phone and he's just jumping from app to app where, like they've previously stated before, like, it's based on real-world apps where you would suddenly go into Candy Crush and then suddenly you would go into Spotify and then suddenly you would go into Twitter and all that kind of stuff. So in that regard, yeah, like, that's kind of a mix of both animation, like, production design, and also story-wise, where they completely ripped off. And honestly, in that aspect, yes, I know in the past that I have slammed Sony Animation by comparing them with Video Brinquedo, but holy crap! In this right here, they took that literally, because those aspects that they ripped off, it is purely shameless. I mean, I'm serious right here. It is so shameless how it is obvious that they would rip off something like Inside Out and Wreck-It Ralph. It's just so pointless. But also, very interestingly enough, there is another movie that you could tell that they've clearly ripped off, and this is probably the most shameless of them all, is a little bit of Smurfs The Lost Village. And that is actually regarding the story itself with Gene on his quest to find his self-identity, where pretty much you have this one character who is surrounded by a whole bunch of one-dimensional characters where their personality and who they are described by, like, this one trait that they have, rather it be with the smiley face or the poop or all that kind of stuff. They're pretty much all located in this one big area, but you have this one emoji or Smurfette, basically, that is completely different than the rest, and now they're pretty much on this journey of self-identity to really know who they are. And honestly, I feel like it's so shameless because we just got Smurfs Lost Village not too long ago, and we know for a fact that Sony Animation was simultaneously working on Smurfs Lost Village and the Emoji Movie, and you could clearly tell that they are picking elements that were from the previous film to put onto the Emoji Movie. So yeah, that's the biggest problem with the Emoji Movie that I can totally see, is that story-wise, it knows for a fact that it is not good enough, it is not creative enough, and it doesn't even have the capability to think about its own story, so it shamelessly pulls it off from any more successful animated features to tell its own. And that, I feel like, that is the moment where it is a terrible movie. And probably it does deserve the massive backlash that it got, which I will get to a little bit later. And then you also got the characters. And honestly, I do not see a single one that is enjoyable, honestly. Like, you could tell the comic relief is supposed to be the giant hand, which is voiced by James Comey. And then you got the girl emoji, which everybody pointed out, like, this is another movie that they ripped off, the Lego Movie, where you got, like, the wild style ripoff, but in here, I noticed that they're pretty much making a bland love interest, but then again, this is Sony Animation, and they do have a massive reputation of making nothing but bland love interests, rather it be Sam from Cloudy or Mavis from Hotel Transylvania. Then you got Gene, which honestly, like, I feel like who he's supposed to be, he's just meh, honestly. Like, even though he's more different than others, he still feels like a massively one-dimensional character where he's like this generic, protagonist who is trying to find his identity, who's trying to be like, trying to find a way to blend in. But the problem is that he just feels like a generic hero. There's nothing much to this guy. There's no real point, really. And you know that at the end of the film, like, he's gonna be, oh, I don't care if, I don't know if, I'm supposed to be this one person. I am me, and everybody loves me for me, and all that kind of bullcrap. It has the same garbage morality. Well, not garbage. I mean, it is a good moral, but, like, it's pretty much saying the same old crap that plenty of other family films have already said in the first place. Again, the writing in here is purely garbage. There is no talent or effort put into it. So, like, you could tell that, like, you could pretty much, like, just watching this trailer, you could read this movie from top to bottom, especially when it shamelessly pulls it from any other animated feature. And the fact that you could tell that all the other movies have done it so much better. Rather it be with Wreck-It Ralph, that Ralph is on his journey to, you know, actually try to be a good guy, but he's a relatable character. He's a likable character. He's a character that's actually crafted by real filmmakers that know what they're doing in an animation studio with a real reputation that people actually enjoy. Instead of, like, this bullcrap right here, I swear to God. But like I said before, this is already gathering such a poor reputation. Like what happened when the teaser trailer was released, the entire internet is slamming it down to the ground. I actually have a few trailers on YouTube put up right here. And interestingly enough, the one from Sony Pictures and the one from Movie Clips, both on YouTube, you could definitely tell that the like and dislike ratio is very similar, where I did some calculations and it's approximately 80% entirely filled with dislikes. Now, as I'm recording this, in both the Sony Pictures and the Movie Clips trailer, the amount of likes that you got right over here is somewhere between 7,500 and 8,000. But then again, you got the dislike bar, which is completely filled with about 35,000 dislikes, around that number. And even the one on the Sony Animation YouTube channel, even though it doesn't really get that much views, you could definitely tell that the grand majority is dislikes, where you got about 140 likes compared to 375 dislikes, somewhere around those numbers. It really is that bad. And even in other places on social media, you could definitely tell that people are hating it, that they are slamming it to the ground, that they are giving it as much poor reviews wherever they can on it, and pretty much slamming Sony Pictures, just giving them all hell, a little bit similar to what happened last year with the 2016 Ghostbusters movie, but just take away all the social issues that were connected with it, and just put in the fact that it is such a terrible movie and such a stupid idea to take something like the Emoji Movie, something like Emojis, and make that as an actual feature film. Like, this is one of those rare movies that people are protesting against it, saying that Hollywood is running out of ideas and they absolutely hate it. However, at the same time, even though there are some people who say that it is terrible, they hate the Emoji Movie, and they're pretty much forming an entire mob to burn this thing down to the ground, there is still a small minority that actually did enjoy the trailer, and they are trying to be really vocal about it. And if you guys enjoyed the trailer, I mean, good for you, all good, you be you. You know, it's fine, I won't judge you for it. But at the same time, though, I have seen some people that are really going out of their way to really try to defend this movie, to try to defend this trailer, trying to say, like, come on, guys, just give this a chance, you know? You're trying to be unfair with the Emoji Movie. Why don't you just give it a chance? The trailer is not that bad. And let me just say right now, if you really think you can try to go onto the internet and try to convince others that maybe the Emoji Movie might not be bad and they should give it a chance, then I'm just going to be very honest with you. You are really doing a foolish mission. A foolish mission right there. I mean, like, at that point, it seems more like you're trying to convince yourself more than you're trying to convince others that the Emoji Movie would be that bad. I mean, let's be honest. Do you really think you're going to convince others that a movie with such a terrible concept coming from a half-rate deadbeat animation studio might actually turn out to be good? I mean, if you're going to try to convince others to give Emoji Movie a chance, you might as well at the same time go and comment to others like, hey, come on, guys, why don't you give Teen Titans Go a chance? You never know, maybe in the next season it'll turn out to be as great as the 2003 series. Come on, just give Teen Titans Go a chance. You know what I mean? It's pretty much a frivolous effort. Again, if you enjoyed the movie, well, if you enjoyed the trailer, that's fine. I won't judge you for it. But don't try to think you can make other people think otherwise, because so far, people are already protesting, people are protesting against it, and they are burning it down to the ground, and that's pretty much why I am pretty sure that this movie is going to turn out to be a box office bomb, especially the way that it's pretty much released at the end of July. And during that time, there are going to be so many other movies that people are going to be interested to see anyways. Like, it's going to be at the same time as, like, Spider-Man Homecoming, War of the Planet of the Apes, Valorian and the Thousand Planets. I think that's the title of it. There's also Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk. And even Sony Pictures themselves doesn't really have that much faith on the Emoji Movie, considering that immediately the week afterwards, they have already scheduled one of their more anticipated films, The Dark Tower. So pretty much as a way to hide from the mess of the Emoji Movie. So that's pretty much why I am pretty much convinced at this point that it's going to be a box office bomb. And at that point, Sony will learn their lesson to not do something really stupid like that again. Because seriously, if it's getting a lot of hate online, then chances are people are not going to go see it. And I mean, even those people who feel like it's not when they see the trailer and they realize, oh, maybe it's not as bad as it seems. Like, is it going to be enough for them to actually go and see the movie? Probably not. Like, at best for them, it could be just a rental. It's not going to be necessarily enough for someone to actually go buy a ticket and to legitimately watch the Emoji Movie in theaters. And as for me, in this case, I feel like with this trailer overall, yeah, like, it's definitely bad, but I will give it that it is possible it's not going to be, like, horrible, like in the levels of Food Fight or Norm of the North or Cloudy 2 or anything like that. That there is still that chance it won't be that bad, but I am pretty confident that this is going to come out as a bad movie. But who knows? Like, there are still some good things to say about it, but I'm not convinced. Like, even if it wasn't for my job to go and review animated films, like, even if it's just on my own free will, I wouldn't freaking watch this movie. I wouldn't pay money to go see this. I mean, seriously, it looks awful. And yeah, that's the whole thing with the Emoji Movie. Honestly, I feel like right now, I just want to get everything over with. I just want to go watch the movie, make my review of it, let it be a box office bomb, and have Sony learn their lesson to not do something stupid like this again, unless they want to really destroy their reputation even more. I mean, seriously. So overall, when it comes to the Emoji Movie, if you want to wait until like, actually go out and fully destroy this movie, let it actually become a box office bomb, then all you have to do is just wait until July 28th so that you can fully give it hell and, yeah, just let it suffer and pay the consequences for this garbage. Okay, so finally we got that out of the way, and let's move on to another trailer of an animated feature. Maybe it's not as notorious or well-known as the Emoji Movie, but it is a trailer that does feel like it's coming from real filmmakers this time. It's coming from people who actually know what they're doing, and coming from an animation studio that is, even though relatively new, does have an actual good reputation of making good movies for people with taste, you know? And that is, of course, coming from Cartoon Saloon and G-Kids working together and finally releasing the first teaser trailer of The Breadwinner, which is going to be directed by Nora Twomey, who previously co-directed The Secret of Kells. And if you guys want a bit more information of what it's about, let me read you a bit of a summary coming from my source here on Cartoon Brew, stating, "The Breadwinner is based on the novel of the same name by Deborah Ellis, telling the story of Parvana, a young girl living under the Taliban regime in Afghanistan, whom, after her father's imprisonment, disguises herself as a boy to become the family's breadwinner. Ellis wrote the screen story, and Anina Doran contributed the screenplay. The film, according to its producers, celebrates the culture, history, and beauty of Afghanistan with a cast that includes many performers of Afghan descent." Now, what is actually very interesting to note is that if you look into the list of producers, one of them is actually a pretty huge name and actually does have a strong connection, like, in terms of making a better world. She does feel very strongly about this subject in particular. And I'm actually talking about, of course, Angelina Jolie, in which, about the movie, she has stated, "I am proud to be a part of this beautiful film with this timely and very important subject matter. Millions of girls around the world have to grow up before their time, working to provide for their families at a very young age and in difficult circumstances. They have the strength to do what no one should ask little girls to do. I hope this film is able to bring this discussion to a broader audience, as much as it is an important and very meaningful film. It also stands on its own as a great piece of art. Director Nora Twomey and her team have done something very special. They have breathed life into the characters and paid respect to the subject matter and to a country where women often struggle." So that's pretty much the whole thing with The Breadwinner. And after looking at that trailer, oh my god, it definitely was a breath of fresh air compared to the Emoji Movie. Like, this actually does give me a reminder that yes, animation can be good. Animation can be done by smart people. Animation can be enjoyable. You know, it doesn't have to be just for idiotic little kids who think that Emoji Movies are fun to watch on the big screen. Like, this is actually a good movie. And it is actually very interesting to see something like this coming from Cartoon Saloon. Like I said before, even though they are a relatively young animation studio, they are still well known to have a bit of a niche. Like when you look at Secret of Kells and Song of the Sea, like everything about those movies are based on Irish and Celtic lore and mythologies, and they really do find great ways to bring that onto the big screen. But with The Breadwinner, it's not really going into Ireland or in their home country and stuff like that. This is actually going into Afghanistan this time, and there really isn't that much of a fantasy element. Like, this is actually going a bit into a pretty real subject matter, even though in the teaser trailer, you do see a bit of fantasy elements and some more stylized animation than what is actually presented in some parts of the teaser trailer right over here. And it actually is pretty interesting to see this, this little girl who has to go and provide for her family. And it is a pretty dark subject matter, but, you know, it could actually turn out interesting. I think, like, my favorite part of this teaser trailer is that it actually mentioned where at some point, like you hear a girl and a guy talking, and it's like, I'm about to tell you a story. Oh, is it going to be a happy story or a sad story? Well, you'll just have to wait and find out. And honestly, that's probably the best thing that you could say in a trailer like this. Honestly, like, you pretty much have to wait and find out if this is going to be a story of hope, a story of happiness, a story of strength, or is it going to be a pretty depressing story? Because I've seen some movies that do touch on this subject matter, and yeah, sometimes they might not be fun. Or maybe, in a sense, you could say that this could be a little bit like a spiritual successor to Persepolis, even though with that movie, it's more about Iran, and this one is more about Afghanistan. But I definitely do trust Cartoon Saloon that they can actually pull off something great and not only just make a good animated feature for animation fans, but something that could be fantastic to watch for both Afghan people and also for women as well, because you could definitely tell that this is a very strong feminist movie. Now, I'm not saying that this is going to be annoying Anita Sarkeesian social justice warrior feminist kind of movie. This is going to be one where it'll give some good empowerment to women when they're watching it, especially the fact that you got Angelina Jolie as an executive producer. This is actually a very rare movie that actually has a woman directing it without any assistance of a man. Like, she's not co-directing it with another guy. She's just like Nora Twomey is directing this alone, and that it stars a girl and pretty much the struggles of like what's going on in her culture, that she has to be responsible for, you know, putting food on the table for her family by disguising herself as a boy. And honestly, I really am fascinated to know where this is going. This does seem like it's going to be really interesting. And I'm a huge fan of Cartoon Saloon. I love Secret of Kells. I really do like Song of the Sea. So maybe this could be another great addition. Who knows how this is going to go? But yeah, I think it is safe to say that I am absolutely excited to see this movie much more than that stupid piece of crap called The Emoji Movie. And if you guys are interested to see this film, well, apparently G-Kids is actually going to release The Breadwinner in theaters in North America somewhere in the fall of 2017. Now, for our next story right over here, this actually feels like a last-minute announcement. Or at least, Disney made a bit of a last-minute announcement on this, because they actually just mentioned this right now, and the release date is honestly pretty soon. It's going to be like in a few weeks. And I'm talking, of course, about the Blu-ray of the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast, which you guys probably know and most likely have seen it. It's already one of the biggest movies of the year, made more than $1 billion at the box office, breaking records left to right. And now Disney decided that they're going to release it on Blu-ray at the same time as the signature collection of Bambi. So yeah, it's actually pretty soon. It's pretty sudden, honestly. But also, at the same time, they also announced what is going to be among the bonus features. And interestingly enough, they actually do have a pretty large list. So, reading here from my source on animationmagazine.net, number one, it includes Enchanted Table Read. Join the cast for the movie's elaborately staged table read, complete with singing and dancing to live music, set pieces, and more. And then you got another one called A Beauty of a Tale. Explore the process of transforming a beloved animated film into a new live-action classic. Then afterwards, you also got the women behind Beauty and the Beast, where Emma Watson introduces several of the talented women in all aspects of production who help bring the enchanted tale to life. Then you would go and have Making a Moment with Celine Dion, where Celine Dion shares what it's like to sing How Does a Moment Last Forever. Then you also got From Song to Screen, Making of the Musical Sequences, where it goes behind the scenes onto a lot of the big musical numbers that they took from the animated film, including Belle, Be Our Guest, Gaston, and Beauty and the Beast. Then afterwards, you also got deleted scenes, where you got 10 minutes of deleted scenes introduced by the director Bill Condon, with stuff that includes Gaston courts Belle, Bread and Jam from Agather, Storming the Ice Gates, Lumiere Torches LeFou, Monsieur Toilette, which, oh my god, I will get to later, Cogsworth Rescues Lumiere, Treacle the Laces, LeFour, I don't know if that's a typo or something, LeFour and Monsieur Toilette Reunites, and that's pretty much it. Then you also got the extended song of one of the new songs from the movie, Days in the Sun. Then you also got the music video of Beauty and the Beast with Ariana Grande and John Legend on top of the making of that music video. And then you also got Disney song selection, jump directly to all your favorite songs and sing along with the movie. So let me just take a moment to go step by step into what they got right over here. And honestly, it is interesting that Disney is offering a lot more behind the scenes featurettes, more so than some of their other movies. Like, even in The Jungle Book, they don't necessarily have a lot. Like, there is, like, one big, more than a half hour long behind-the-scenes video, and then you also got a short featurette on the little kid that played Mowgli, and then you also got another one, which is watching the scene with King Louie singing I Want to Be Like You, looking at the different processes, like the animation itself, the storyboards, the finished product, and all that kind of stuff. But with Beauty and the Beast, yeah, they're giving us a little bit more. Well, like the first one, Enchanted Table Read, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if this is going to be like the big main one. Like, they're going to do the entire movie with it. So this could be more than 2 hours long, just watching all the actors and some of the people in the crew just singing the songs and trying to reenact the movie and all that stuff. And then you also got the classic template, which is probably the main thing that they would have, which is A Beauty of a Tale. So that is your standard behind the scenes stuff. The women behind Beauty and the Beast. Now, I do like the idea that we do look inside the making of Beauty and the Beast and highlight the women that are working there. But I do hope that they're not just focusing on like the big superstars like with Emma Watson or Celine Dion or whoever is in the cast. But honestly, if they're going to take the time to show us the women that made the movie, like the costume designers, the makeup artists, the set designers, and all that kind of stuff, that I could probably get behind with. That would actually be a pretty cool behind-the-scenes video right over there. And then there's also Making a Moment with Celine Dion. That one I'm actually really surprised that they don't have the music video in itself showing, like, Celine Dion singing that song, like, How Does a Moment Last Forever? Like, honestly, I thought they would do the same thing with John Legend and Ariana Grande, but I guess you get what you bargain for. But then you also got another behind the scenes moment where we see the behind the scenes of making Belle Be Our Guest, Gaston, and Beauty and the Beast, which could be probably interesting. And yeah, you could definitely tell, considering that this movie has a huge budget, it'll be interesting to see like how they would make it so grandiose and stuff like that. And then you also got the extended version of Days in the Sun, which honestly, I really do not care about. I think we can all agree that out of all the new songs that are in the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast, Days in the Sun is easily the most forgettable, so I don't really see that much of a point. But I guess they want to do it because it says here, learn more about the Beast's childhood in an alternate version of this beautiful song introduced by Condon. So, I don't know, I just don't care, really. But then also, you got some of your standard stuff, like the music video, the making of it, and songs, which, honestly, overall, like, even though, yes, it does offer a lot, at the same time, it does feel like they put in a lot of fluff into it. Like, there's a lot of them that really don't grab my interest, and I don't think, like, a lot of people would go to the behind the scenes to check out those things anyways, like the music videos or the sing-along things or looking into Days in the Sun or any of the other stuff. Like, there is a lot of filler in this. But I do have a feeling, like I said before, that the Enchanted Table read could possibly be the main component of this Blu-ray if they are going to do the entire movie in this. Either that, or they're probably just going to make A Beauty of a Tale the big one right over there, since it is the full-on making of featurette. But we'll just have to wait and see how it goes. Like, personally, if you ask me, just stick with the original animated film. Just go and get the Signature Collection, since it is out now. Or if you really want to go and get more behind-the-scenes stuff, then go and get the Diamond Edition. It's, like, far superior right over there. But yeah, overall, this is pretty much what you're getting. It does, like, I'm not saying that this is bad, but I don't know. It feels like it does have a lot of fluff, and we'll just have to wait and see how that goes. And if you guys are interested to actually own Beauty and the Beast, then you have to wait until June 6th, when it will come out on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital HD. Our next story that we got right over here is going to be about a Japanese animated feature. And funny enough, I think the best way to describe this one is that this is going to be the anti-Grave of the Fireflies, where it does have a very similar setting, but the mood and the tone, oh yeah, I do have a strong feeling that it's going to be quite the opposite. And I am talking about a movie called In This Corner of the World, a movie that is written and directed by Suano Katabushi, and actually it says here, based on the award-winning Japanese manga. Which I'm pretty sure that is a typo, like the person who wrote this article went a little too fast and accidentally put Japanese in between the M and the A in manga. So we ended up with a Japanese manga. So I'm just wondering, have any of you guys read any interesting Japanese mangas lately? Nah, I'm just joking around. I do those mistakes all the time myself, don't worry. But anyways, it's based on a Japanese manga by Fumio Kuno. And on my source here on Deadline, it actually stated, the story is that it is a coming-of-age tale set against the backdrop of World War II about power of the human spirit. The story follows a young lady named Suzu Urano, who moves in 1944 in the small town of Kure in Hiroshima, to live with her husband's family. Suzu's life is thrown into chaos when her town is bombed. Her perseverance and courage underpin the challenges faced by the Japanese in the midst of a violent, war-torn country, and proves that even in the face of adversity and loss, people can come together and rebuild their lives. And I was actually pretty interested, and I decided to go and check out the trailer for it, which you guys can actually go and check it out on YouTube. Just write down In This Corner of the World, and they would put it up right there. And honestly, it is actually really interesting. Now, the reason why I said that this is the anti-Grave of the Fireflies is that It is similar in terms of the setting, is that this is a movie that is set in the middle of World War II and the disaster known as the Hiroshima bombing happened, and you pretty much get to see the lives of people during that dark time. And with Grave of the Fireflies, it is such a depressing movie. Yes, it is a masterpiece, but my God, it's very it is nearly impossible to find anyone that would come out with a happy face with that thing. Considering that, in short, the story is basically, once upon a time, you get these two kids, and they're dead. The end. Because they're stupid freaking little kids. But with this one, on the other hand, you actually do get a sense of hope into this. Like, it does carry a good moral that even in the darkest times that's going on in the world, even if the place that you live is literally bombed, there is still some hope that you can get together with your family to rebuild your lives and continue forward to go and be happy. That doesn't mean that you would literally lose everything, as long as you still got your loved ones close to you and go and rebuild your lives. You know what I mean? And even in the animation itself, at least in terms of the color schemes of the characters, there is that sense of warmth. You could tell they use a lot of bright colors in this, and there is that sense of not only warmth, but there's also a sense of family, a sense of happiness, a sense of joy that, you know, things can be great, things can be all right as long as you stick with these people. And you do have a bit of that nice tone with it, along with some nice artistry as well. The animation does look pretty smooth. The characters themselves do look a little bit more rounded than you would get in most other animes. So it does feel nice. Like, you know, it feels calming when you look at this when you look at the animation. It does feel nice, you know. There is that small sense of joy when you look at it, and it really does take effect, like, in terms of the story itself. Like, even in the darkest times, there is still hope. Like, with these people, like, sticking together, there is still that sense of joy. And that's pretty much why I feel like it would be interesting to go and watch this one. And yeah, in the trailer itself, it does show some pretty dark moments as well. Like, you will see some consequences of the Hiroshima bombing, but still, like, it's going to emphasize the story as well. Like, of course, like, there will be some light moments, but everything is not like freaking My Neighbor Totoro. There will be some dark times as well in this movie. But it is going to be pretty interesting. And even in right over here, it actually stated the animation for In This Corner of the World is hand-drawn, and the film itself recently won the Covenant Animation of the Year Award at this year's 40th Japan Academy Prize, which is basically the Japanese version of the Academy Awards. It has also been selected to premiere in competition at the LA Film Festival in June. So for all you LA people, if you want to get a chance to go and see this, then just go to that film festival and you can go and see it for yourself. But yeah, it does seem like a pretty fascinating movie. And there could be a possibility that we will be hearing this for a while. Like, if it really is that big, if it really is that critically acclaimed, it could be possible it could be like the next Your Name or something like that. But if you guys are interested to see this for yourselves, well, Shout Factory and Funimation are going to be releasing this on August 11th in a few selected theaters, and maybe later on we'll get it on DVD or something. And so finally, we are going to end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And I decided I want to go and do a little bit of a continuation from last week's story, because my God, what a pure coincidence that this was actually announced. Now, if you guys may recall, in the last episode, I mentioned how that there was a How to Train Your Dragon ride that would open in Dubai, and also made a little bit of a commentary about how Universal Studios should have a bit more of a DreamWorks presence, considering that Comcast did buy DreamWorks Animation, and they should use them a little bit more than just releasing movies and stuff like that, and also, like, the Netflix series and all that kind of stuff. They gotta do a little bit more with it. They gotta have a bit more of a theme park presence, more than just Shrek 4D. Well, it seems that for some reason, maybe there's somebody at Universal Studios who listened to me, because now they actually made the announcement that Shrek 4D is going to close down at Universal Studios Hollywood. Going into my source here at insideuniversal.net, it has stated that Shrek 4D is set to close on August 13th. Inside Universal has learned. Initially reported by Park Journey on Twitter, the 4D attraction based on the hit DreamWorks franchise will be closing after a 14-year run. Shrek 4D opened in 2003, replacing the Rugrats Magic Adventure 3D attraction, and has several clones located in Universal parks around the world, including Universal Orlando. As of now, this closure is set for Hollywood's version only. Now, yes, I know some people are a little bit confused about this news, considering that they would probably go and tell me, well, come on, Matt, isn't that quite the opposite of what you were talking about? You mentioned how Universal should have more of a DreamWorks presence, and this news is mentioning how they're going to get rid of it. Okay, yes, technically that is true. I know that this really is contradicting myself, but here is something that is rather interesting. Now, rumors are spreading around that the replacement for Shrek 4D could be something that is based on Kung Fu Panda. So that's basically the whole news that's going on right here, is that Universal Hollywood is closing down their version of Shrek 4D and could possibly be replacing it with a Kung Fu Panda ride. There is no confirmation if it's going to be a Kung Fu Panda 4D ride or if they're recreating another entire ride in general. That's all we know what's going on so far. And honestly, if I may talk a little bit about Shrek 4D, honestly, the show itself, like, it's decent. I would say it's okay. It's not the best thing to come out of the Shrek franchise. Like, the first Shrek and second Shrek are far superior, but still a bit better than Shrek the Third and Shrek 4D. It's supposed to be this little 3D movie, and that's pretty much it, to be honest. And I've previously stated before in the last episode that there are plenty of other places that you could go and check it out. You can legitimately go and see it on Netflix, and you can also get it on DVD. I don't think the DVDs are available now, but at least you can go on eBay and actually buy a DVD of Shrek 4D, which in this case is just going to be called Shrek 3D. But yeah, like the show, but going back to the show itself, I just want to mention, like, it's decent. You know, it's a fun little adventure just to see a bit of the continuation where we see Shrek and Fiona, where are they at their point in their marriage? And also seeing the return of Lord Farquaad as well. And, you know, it's a fun little thing, but that's pretty much it. Compared to plenty of other 3D shows in different theme parks, like, this one just turns out rather mediocre. And this is the one that, for many theme park fans, like, if it would be removed, they would miss it the least, honestly. They wouldn't really care much if they got rid of Shrek 4D, because all it is just a 3D show, and that's it. Maybe you do get some funny little effects going on, like some water squirting out or wind blowing at you or stuff like that, but that's all that it is, honestly. There really isn't too much to it. All it is just a 3D show. I mean, like I said before, that's why you can actually go and get it on DVD without a problem, really. It doesn't offer much. And honestly, like, if you compare it to other 3D shows, you could see that this is a very minimal show. Like, for example, when you look at Terminator 2 3D, that one has so much more. It's not just a 3D show, but you also got live actors playing the scenes. You also got some animatronic robots at the same time trying to shoot the Terminator and all that stuff. Like, you got so many things going on all around you. Or another great example is possibly my favorite ride of all time, Muppet Vision 3D. When you enter into the 3D theater area, the entire place is a complete recreation of the Muppet Theater. And even if that's going on at the same time, you also got, yeah, like, even if that's going on, you also got plenty of other animatronics all around you interacting with the show itself. Like, you got Statler and Waldorf and Bean Buddy. You also got the orchestra pit. And then right behind you, you also got the Swedish Chef. And on top of that, you also got live actors, where you got someone dressed up as Sweetums walking around during the show at the same time, you know? Like, they pretty much make sure to make this fully immersive experience. It's not just a 3D show. It's, in a way, it's an entire ride where you just sit down and just let the world suck in for you. Where Shrek, it's just that. It's pretty much just the theater, and that's pretty much it. Like, the best thing to come out of Shrek 4D is honestly the pre-show beforehand, where you see the three little pigs, the three blind mice, and Pinocchio all in a cage where you're in Farquaad's dungeon and all that kind of stuff. Like, they got it right there, but then once you get into the show, you only get the 3D show, and that's pretty much it. The most that would happen outside of that is where you get that Tinkerbell parody at the end, pretty much shot out and got electrocuted by the exit sign, and that's pretty much it, honestly. Like, whatever that they're going to replace, if they do keep it in the 4D or 3D show format, then they gotta do a lot more. Like, let's say that the Kung Fu Panda rumors are actually true. Then what they gotta do is that they gotta give it a massive makeover. They cannot just keep it as just a 3D show. They gotta make sure that the environment around them is fully immersive. You gotta make the theater section, like, entirely themed, based on the area that the Furious Five would go and relax. You gotta have some animatronics on the side so that the action won't just happen on just the screen, but you can also have characters interacting. Like, you would actually have the Furious Five on the side and stuff like that, and like, they would open the door and they would close in so that they can enter in the screen and all that kind of stuff. You know, they gotta do a lot more. That's the thing. Like, what you did with Shrek 4D, you gotta add a lot more into it if you want to actually make a full experience. And honestly, I'm not gonna be too sad. I'm not gonna be sad at all that they would get rid of Shrek 4D. And plus the fact that they're just getting rid of it in Universal Hollywood. Like, you're still gonna get it in Universal Japan or in Universal Orlando. It's pretty much the same story like in the Tower of Terror, where they're pretty much taking down that one in California, where they're replacing it with Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, but we still have the one in Disneyland Paris and also in Walt Disney World, where, and technically you also have the one in Japan, but that is completely themed into something original. It's not Twilight Zone themed, but you get what I mean. So yeah, rather if they are going to do that with the other Shrek 4D attractions, who knows? But this is definitely a step in the right direction. At least soon we could possibly get a new DreamWorks ride out of it. And yeah, I just wish the best for Universal Hollywood to know what they're actually going to do with it. Maybe they can turn out something that could be great, something that would make nobody miss Shrek 4D, since, like, it's not technically not gone forever, but who knows. And anyways, that is all that I've got for this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be lovely. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, see you later, dudes.